Thanks for listening to Schlereth and Evans On Demand. Did you know you can listen to us on Alexa? Enable our skill today, then say, Alexa, play 104.3 The Fan.
Now we transition into question marks. So get your questions in. It's brought to you by Brakes Plus. RamosLaw.com text line is 303-713-1043. That's 303-713-1043. Make sure you use that hashtag question mark on social media, and we will get to your questions that stink. You will answer here on a post-Vandals weekend Monday.
Yes.
Are you okay? Your energy level's good?
Oh, yeah. I'm ready to roll.
Ready to rock. All right. Question mark. This one comes in from Teddy. Who's the first Bronco in training camp to go bagel shop guy and get in a fight? Did you see that? I know it was Vandals weekend, but did you see little bagel shop guy?
Yeah. He's all over the place now.
Little tiny guy.
He's all angry about being
angry,
short.
Little slappy.
Yeah.
Like, wow, he was mad.
Do you think he's doing, do you think bagel shop guy does that just because he's trying to make videos, or do you think
he did something else at a 7-Eleven before the bagel shop?
Yeah, I saw
which
that.
Called the cops. Like, so I think he's a little bit of an attention monger.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think maybe he kind of does that on purpose. Is he angry?
Yeah. Who do I think is the first guy to get into a fight?
Yes.
The cooler. Our guy, our rookie. Dalton Risner, the cooler.
The name is Dalton.
Yeah, the cooler.
Okay.
I think that Dalton plays, he doesn't fall into the category of, hey guys, we're, like, this is walkthrough.
It's a hat day, guys.
Right, you know, So I think Dalton's going to go to a point where a veteran's going to be ticked off about it. Usually, if it's going to happen, it usually happens first and foremost in the trenches. Because, you know, you're beating on each other every day. So he's a guy that, you know, goes a little beyond the whistle at all times. I think he's a guy that would be, because the pace with which he's going to practice at, which is great, is occasionally going to be a little higher pace than you might want on the defensive side if you're a veteran.
When Derek Wolfe told us earlier this offseason that they had to tell Dalton Risner kind of calm down a little bit.
Right.
That lets you know everything you need to know about this rookie.
Yeah, and that's not going to – we didn't have pads on. It was OTAs. Okay, all right, you coach me up. I'm still probably, you know, crossing the line occasionally. But when the pads come on and they're practicing – come on, right? He's going to cross that line. So that'll be the first fight guy.
Refresh my memory. Why do you call him the cooler? Because anytime you say the cooler, I think a water boy. He's spitting a cooler. Like,
No. The cooler comes from Roadhouse. Dalton.
The name is Dalton.
Yeah, the name. So, do we have that soundbite, Ben? The Dalton Risner soundbite?
Ben is going to the restroom right now.
Oh.
He's got his own efforty music.
Right. He's got a potty break.
Yeah, he's pushing one out right now, as they say.
Okay. You got the Dalton Risner.
I'll find it here in a second.
Okay. Well, he's the cooler. He's Dalton Risner. And how do you think about, or is fighting in practice okay? Is fighting in training camp okay?
Sure.
Were you or Nalen, you guys ever mix it up?
I don't know that I ever gotten. I mean, there's always.
Did you plan it, or did it just happen?
It would just happen.
Okay.
So I've had a couple. I'm not gonna call them fights, altercations. You know, last push you last. I used to have this guy. You remember Bobby? Oh gosh, what was Bobby's? No, I don't even remember him. He's a first rounder out of Michigan State, defensive lineman. Bobby, the hell was his name? I used to call him Push Me Last. He's driving crazy. Cause, you know, you'd finish, you'd lock up, the play'd be over, and you'd be walking away, and he'd just give you a little push. Probably got drafted, Bobby Wilson. Probably got drafted in the, 91?
91, pick 17.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Bobby Wilson, I used to call him Push Me Last. And, so you always try to get the last push in, you know, and, He just drive you crazy with it. It was like his way of showing you that, like, I won the drill even when you beat him. Like, he's just going to give you a little shove on the way out.
Yeah.
So we're doing one-on-ones or whatever, you know, and you finish and the drill is over and you go to break up. You know, you're still locked up. And as you're breaking up, he just gives you a little shove. And I was just so tired of push to last, you know, right? So he gives me a little shove, then he turns his back, and I shoved him right in the back on the ground, and then I ran away. He got up trying to swing, and I was just laughing.
Like, you got you last.
I got you last. Shoved you last, Bobby. And I ran away from him.
Okay.
But, yeah, there's a couple of times that, you know, that's just fun, but there's a couple of times where you kind of little shoves and stuff and things of that nature, but, mm-hmm. But not, you know, I didn't really, I mean, but there were always a few scuffles in camp and along the line of scrimmage where, you know, it got a little rough and you had to get in there and kind of pull some guys apart.
Right. Okay. Well, Duff, did you find the audio?
You are the bouncers. I am the cooler.
Yes.
All you have to do is watch my back and each other's. Take out the trash.
Dalton Risner, the cooler.
There you go. The cooler. Going to be the first one to go.
Yeah.
Well, not necessarily Bagel Shop guy, because Bagel Shop guy got his butt whooped, or at least just leaned on by a tall guy.
Right.
Risner will be the tall guy, whoever we're going to call that guy. Opposite Bagel Shop guy.
Yeah.
You guys got to calm down.
Bagel
Maybe
Shop.
Less coffee.
Yeah, Bagel Shop guy is just very, he's just very upset about pretty much everything.
All right, it's question mark. Use the hashtag question mark on social media and the RamosLaw.com text line, 303-713-1043. That's 303-713-1043. I had it here a second ago. Andrew wants to know, why are people down on Noah Fant? Now, you and I brought this up before the show. So, like, pre-6 a.m. stuff. So
right.
Let's get to this on the air.
Yeah.
Because last year, everyone, a little millennial Ben, when he wasn't taking a bathroom break, was playing Chub Chub Chub.
Right.
A zillion times a show.
Yeah.
Like, we had it fired up. Everybody was hyped about Bradley Chubb. Everyone was on board. Everyone was looking forward. You were the lone voice. Zach said it as well. But you and Zach were the guys emphasizing 10 sacks. This is double-digit sacks. He can do it. He can produce. He can be big time. It seems like with Noah Fant, it's a little bit of the opposite. Why is that? Why are people like Bill Barnwell on ESPN saying, whoa, 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 expect Fant to be good later? Maybe not good this year. Why aren't people hyped up more about Noah Fant?
Well, I think because, one, he was the second tight end guy drafted out of Iowa, right? So, you know, although they've been a factory of producing tight ends. I mean, George Kittle came out of there now. Mm-hmm. You got the kid that went, what was the ninth overall pick to Detroit? That
DJ
kid.
Hawkinson,
and now Noah Fant. And I think there's because there's this presumed learning curve because he's a guy that you're not thinking of him as being an inline guy, so he's not going to be able to block as well, you know, and he might be your move tight end and this, that, and the other, but I'm telling you, there is nobody coming out of the system that Rich ran, Scangarello ran with Kyle Shanahan. Nobody that runs more multiple formations. Well, whether it's you or Tiger, you know, that's West Coast, like, whether it's two tights and one back, two backs, one tight, two tights, two backs, you know, all these different personnel groupings, right? And they will personnel group you to death. So there are going to be opportunities for matchups. But Mike always tries to pin me down on this, and it drives me crazy because he's always like, well, how many catches does Noah Fant need to have a successful season? And I'm like, well, I mean, I don't know. Like, what if he's drawn double teams because he's, you know, such an effect? What if he has 42 catches and four touchdowns? But you get a ton of extra production out of your other slot. What if all of a sudden Deshaun Hamilton has a 40 catch, you know, five touchdown season as well? I don't know what Deshaun had last year, but what if all of a sudden the third wide receiver production doubles? Like, is that just a function of, oh, Deshaun Hamilton got a lot better? Or is that a function of, oh, personnel-wise, they got a lot better? And now all of a sudden, you see in these two tights, one back, three wide, you know, these sets, that all of a sudden, you've developed some other guys that have become, you know, very effective. If all of a sudden Now he's got 42 catches and you get a guy like Andy Janovich that gets 35 catches and now Dejon Hamilton gets, you know, and they're complementary in nature. Like to me, like there's a huge benefit there that maybe can't be quantified just by the numbers alone.
It's like working out, and if you don't post on social network and it didn't happen. People right. think that if you don't see stats, what a disappointment. Only had 40 catches. Are you kidding me?
Right.
Plus, Noah Fant's not really a traditional tight end. Noah Fant could be your third receiver.
Right. He could be the slot guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He could have 60 catches. He could be like Evan Ingram, which is a guy I've always compared him to, who had a 60-catch season when he was a rookie. Mm-hmm. So why are people almost kind of preparing you, not necessarily for failure, but preparing you or tempering expectations for Fant? Well, it takes time. Hyerman might start, or oh, this or that. That's the opposite of what we were with Chubb.
Well, they'll look at a guy like George Kittle, who kind of came out of Iowa, but he kind of came out in that same, could really run, you know, was a 4-5 flat guy, could really run. And, you know, you worry about him being able to be a blocker and some of the other things. His rookie season had 43 receptions.
515 and two touchdowns.
And two touchdowns. Now.
Pretty good.
Yeah. And I will tell you this. The guy can block. The guy can be an inline guy. The guy can be a backside tight end. He can be in the backfield motion through. Like he does a lot of things for the Niners that, if Noah Fant could have those kind of numbers and do the things that he does, and last year he had, 88 catches, 1,377 yards, 207 of it against the Broncos.
Five touchdowns.
Yeah, five touchdowns. So, I would love to see his touchdown numbers, you know, his red zone numbers, get a little more elevated than Kittle's are. But, Kittle did it with three different quarterbacks playing, so that would be a really cool thing to see. But it's one of those complimentary discussions that we have that the numbers don't tell the whole story. You know, that they always say the numbers never lie, but they don't tell the truth either. You know, they're somewhere in between, and you got to use, like, I hope to goodness that football never gets to the point where baseball is right now, where all they do is analyze numbers and they don't actually look at players. You know, we'll track the numbers.
The thing doesn't work that well. Like, let's just analyze this game based on data. Football's not like that.
Mm-mm.
You can't do that.
But baseball, actually, you know what? They've had some teams that have had a lot of success with it. And so, you know, then people go to the nth degree. You know, they just expose it all and say, well, we're not going to have any baseball eyes in our facility. It's just all number crunchers. And, you know, that doesn't work either. I mean, you can, the baseball is littered with guys who don't have great spin rates or don't, you know, do, there's certain things that they just lack, velocity or whatever, that just, you don't know how to play. They just are great that way. So, you've got to have that combination of the two things. You got to look at the numbers. Of course, you got to look at the numbers. You know, it's just like scouting, right? You got to look at 40 times. You got to look at vertical jumps. You got to look at athleticism. You got to look at all that stuff.
But the film matters more.
But bottom line is you got to look at the player and you got to watch him play. And because the things you can't quantify through a 40 test or whatever, it's the read and react ability. It's the, you know, being in the right place at the right time. It's those guys that have ball skills. Ball skills comes with recognizing things and not having to think about them, recognize them and just having your body completely react to them. And that's where that stuff comes from, you know. Now, can you catch or can you not catch? If you want to talk about ball skills just by purely by catching, but to get into position, to get into a position where you have ball skills, to me, that's reactionary. You know, that's how fast you process information and how fast do you react to the data that's sitting in front of your eyeballs. That's what makes great players.
And with Noah Fant, you've got Joe Flacco loves tight ends. Last full season he played, he made Big Ben Watson at 37 years old a 60-plus catch guy.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a Scangarello offense that loves, it's a Shanahan-Kubiak offense. They love the tight end position. And I brought up Evan Engram, but I'm going to bring up a name nobody ever talks about. I want to know what you think, because you know who this guy is. Not many people will, even though he had 71 catches last year. That's Austin Hooper from Atlanta, the Stanford kid. The reason why I bring that up is because Wade Harmon, new Broncos tight end coach, came from Atlanta.
Okay.
Austin Hooper, like Noah Fant is more talented from a physical standpoint.
No question.
Than Austin Hooper, who had 71 catches for the Falcons.
Yeah. Hoover's a good player.
Yes.
Hoover, he's a really good player. Does a lot of different things well. Is not a devastating blocker. Is not kind of, you know, your prototypical inline tight end. But he does motion. He is a movement guy. They do a good job of getting him in one-on-one situations. Great job in the, you know, in the great, they do a great job of, you know, not only having him hook up over the ball and doing the things that those tight ends in that system do, but it do a great job of getting him the one-on-one matchups when they spread and they do some of those things. Really good in the play action game. He's good at selling, you know, on the backside, selling, banging down on the back end, holding on and then letting out loose, you know, or letting out, late for the, you know, the little, flat route there and the things that he does that stuff really exceptionally well. Really worked hard last off season, with, Matt Ryan and saying, hey man, where are you? I'm going to work out with you. I'm going to catch. I'll be there every day. Like let's do this thing together. Really put in the effort and the time and it really elevated his game. And so, as you mentioned, that tight end coach was that process. He saw that happen. So he can give that kind of, he can give that kind of tutelage to a Noah fan, say, hey, this is how Hooper did it. And Hooper can't run. I mean, Hooper is one of those awkward guys where he, like, you can tell that he doesn't have the great movement skills, but he just seems to be able to get open.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I would just, I don't know what he ran at the combine or anything, but just looking at his body and the way he runs, he's a 4.7 guy. Tops, you know, that's
and
like
you
top
can tell
end.
He's giving max effort on every play.
Right.
A guy like Fant is really smooth.
Right.
Where he's running fast and you're like, it's effortless.
Yeah. So Hooper doesn't have that, but he's become a, you know, he's just become a very reliable target, very smart, understands, you know, when to release, when to hang on, doing all those things. So, that's a great, I mean, that's a, that would be, I would be thrilled if you get that kind of production, right?
Yeah.
The Hooper kind of production.
And the year before that, Hooper caught 49 passes. So even that.
Right.
Like, I don't think we can just paint Noah Fant into this corner of, he's got to have 50 catches this year. Like, let's look at everything. History's
right.
important, but let's look at everything. Let's look back at the RamosLaw.com text line, 303-713-1043. Question mark. Use the hashtag question mark on social media and our RamosLaw.com text line. Again, 303-713-1043. Mark says, Stink, can you put this egomaniac Lammy in place because he keeps talking and writing about the Broncos need a big back? Can I explain myself to Mark? The hater age is thick this morning on Monday. It's behind Royce Freeman. You going to tell me you're going to trust Devontae Booker for any sort of carries? I don't care if he's 219 pounds. I wouldn't even call him a lock because Vance Joseph is gone. And his favorite guy was Devontae Booker.
Good.
Was supposed to replace C.J. Anderson, never did. So when I say, and I did a video on Friday, I'm sure you saw it, 60 Seconds with Cecil.
Yeah.
And I said, hey, you know, Jeremy Hill's out there. Orleans Dark was out there. These guys have been much more productive than Devontae Booker's ever been. And your other backs behind Lindsey and Freeman are 175 pounds.
Right.
Khalfani Muhammad, 175 pounds. And Devontae Jackson, who I do like, 175 pounds. Don't you need some size, or am I an egomaniac like Mark says?
Well,
or is it both?
Yeah, no, and I don't disagree with you. I have never been, and you know this from day one, I've never been a like Booker as a player. Again, this is not personal. I just have never, I've never seen anything out of Booker that made me go, oh yeah, that's the dude I want on my back. You know, one of the things I always look at with a running back is I always think to myself, and Lindsey's this way, if you block it for four, can he get you seven? You know, if you block it for two, can he get you four?
TD did that for you.
Right. And so that's always kind of been the way I look at running backs. Like, what, like, how much do you fall forward? How many more yards do you get out of this than it was designed for? And, you know, I just see far too often times in regards to Booker where you block it for five and he gets you two. You block it for four and he gets you one. Where you block it for eight and he gets you six. Like that is my vision of him running the ball. And it may be tainted to some degree because I just, but I've seen that happen. How many third down and ones have you seen him get tripped by one hand and fall short?
Or pick the wrong hole because he's a power gap runner. They're using wide zone this year. That's awful for Booker.
I've never seen anything that made me feel like, oh my goodness, yes. You know, it's funny, they were doing running back drills like the first day of camp last year. And you know, they're going through the ropes and they're doing a bunch of stuff. And it was like eye opening. Mike and I were standing there. Was it Mike and I? No, Mike was having the heart surgery. It was somebody else and I were standing there. And I was just like, just watch the feet of the running backs. Just watch them. And I'm like, oh, it's Scott. I said, just watch. And so Scott's watching. I go, what do you notice? And the worst feet of the crew, like, and it wasn't even close. Like the slowest footed guy was Devontae. And it wasn't close. And you're like, why didn't he get tripped up in the hole all the time? Like it was like one of those things. It was shocking when you just watched it. Like Lindsay is like lightning, you know, and I don't care what sport you play. If you've got great feet and great hands, I look at the infield of the Colorado Rockies. Infield's great, right? You know, Trevor Story, unbelievable feet. He can get to any ball. Who's got the best hands in baseball? There's no question in my mind. Nolan Arenado's got the best hands in baseball. How many barehanded plays have you seen Nolan Arenado make? His hands are like lightning. Darryl Green used to say this. Hands are good. The feet are better. When it comes to coverage and stuff, like, for offensive linemen, I've always looked at the left tackle position or the tackle position that's open side of tackle and corners as the same position. Now, I know that one weighs 100 more pounds or whatever, but your ability to stab dudes, to readjust, to turn your hips, to run your feet, to do all those things, they're like very similar skill sets. One is just, you know, more physically done with bigger guys,
mm-hmm.
but the skill set is... The skill set's almost identical. I had this conversation with Pete Carroll, and he's like, 100%. It's like the same, you're looking at the same, a lot of the same stuff. I mean, obviously there's differences, there's no question, but it's kind of very similar in that. And Darryl always say, hey man, you gotta have great hands, you gotta stab guys, you gotta be able to do that. But it's like, my feet are what saved me. You know, and the fact that the guy is the fastest human on the planet. I think on his 55th birthday, he ran a 4.5 flat, 4.48 or something. I mean,
wow.
The dude is absolutely insane. So, I mean, you got to have that ability. It's important.
Well, it is the road to redemption for the Denver Broncos in training camp, which starts on Thursday. But which Bronco has the longest road? Answer might surprise you, and it's next.
Rolling for you on a Monday, Stink. Cecil Amy sitting in for Mike Evans. And, well, it's Road to Redemption. We even printed up T-shirts.
Yes.
Road to Redemption shirts. And, well, who's got the longest road when it comes to redemption for the Broncos in 2019?
The longest road to redemption?
Longest road, the toughest road.
I think off the top of everybody's head, because they're all quarterback possessed, would say Flacco. But I think it's Garrett Bowles. I think Garrett Bowles has probably the most to prove and probably as much pressure on him as anybody. Cause I think a couple different things. One, he was a first round pick in 2017? And that's, you know, to me, when they were still drafting athletes over football players. And so he's got kind of that first round stigma on him, very much like Paxton Lynch had that 2016 first round stigma on him. And that's, I just will tell you from being in a locker room, it's like There is nothing worse. You want to become a pariah quickly? Be a first rounder who can't play. Because you think about it from a veteran's perspective, you come in as a first rounder and you get more money dumped in your lap than most guys have made in their career that have been in the locker room 6-7 years. So instantly, if you can't perform, you're like, really? You just dumped all that money in that guy's lap and I've been doing it and starting for as many years as I've been starting?
Right.
So I don't want to say there's jealousy, but it's more
animosity.
Animosity. Thank you. That, like, there's just this feeling of, like, you're not angry necessarily at the guy, but you're kind of angry at the organization.
The situation.
Yeah. Whatever. Right. And so, like, those guys have a lot more to prove than the other guys. Like, be Philip Lindsay. You'd be beloved. Because here's a kid that wasn't given a shot, that had to sign as a free agent, had to kind of quote unquote swallow his pride, and came in and put together a phenomenal year. Like, that guy is the most loved guy in the locker room, right? He's going to earn every single cent that he makes. And so those first rounders, man, if you come in as a first rounder and you can't perform, that's a tough situation. Like, and you know, we've had plenty of them here over the years. And that goes all the way back to, you know, Mike Shanahan. When you want to talk about the Marcus Nashes of the world and some of the other guys that were drafted in the first round that just never really panned out, those guys don't have a great NFL experience when it comes to how they're received in a locker room or perceived in a locker room.
I think about that every time I wear my Jarvis Moss jersey.
Yeah.
Not that I have one, but.
But you know, you know what I'm saying, because you look at that and you go, dude, and especially when you're gifted, like when you're really athletically gifted and you don't produce at this level, and you've been given a lot of money right off the bat, it just, you become a little bit of a pariah. So like Joe Flacco's a Super Bowl champion, you know, he's a guy that doesn't, in my mind, doesn't have nearly as much to prove. Now, in the public's mind, you know, they're going to focus on the quarterback because that's what we tend to do. But, I mean, you're a first rounder. You haven't performed. You lead the league in holding calls every year. You give up sacks. You're athletically gifted. They essentially brought in who is considered one of the best offensive line coaches in football to fix you. I mean, there's a lot of things going on there that's going to be, there's a ton of pressure there.
And the team has to make a decision on this fifth year option after this year.
Mm-hmm.
So I know the fifth year option will be till 2021, but they have to make a decision after this year. Do we want to put the fifth year option on Garrett Bowles? So that's a lot of incentive for him personally to finally get it done. But the question remains, will Garrett Bowles even start 16 games at left tackle? I can't speak. Will Garrett Bowles start the season at left tackle and finish it at left tackle? Or will he be replaced?
See, I would be, if he does, that's going to be a testament to Mike Munchak. Like, if he can do that and he's playing well enough to do that, the issue that you get into is a depth issue. Do they have enough depth and do they have enough confidence to be able to put somebody else over there, reshuffle, retool the line? Do they try to move Juwan James over there and you know, put Wilkinson over at right tackle? Like, is that a move that they're willing to make? I don't know. But if he does play and start all 16 games and have a great season, that would be a real feather in the cap of a Mike Munchak.
Is Garrett Bowles' play more important than Joe Flacco's play? If that sounds odd, scold me, but.
No. Like Joe Flacco, you can't be as productive as you want to be if your tackle is busting assignments and not playing well. So, you know, I still think it comes down to probably Joe Flacco, because then it comes down to coaching. You know, like, to me, then you start going, okay, if we have that weakness, how are we going to hide that weakness? What are we going to do to fix that weakness? because there comes a time, you know, for any football team where you have an issue and you're like, all right, we're going to have to solve the issue. And if you don't have the depth to solve the issue by changing the personnel, then you've got to change the way you go about blocking or the way you go about, you know, whatever it is, whatever that particular issue you have is. So you see teams, they say, okay, we're going to become predominantly left-handed and we're going to line tight ends up over there and we're going to make sure that we don't have a lot of one-on-ones and we don't have a lot of, like, we're going to make sure we've got guys beside him who can help and make sure he recognizes what he needs to recognize. Like, you see teams make those transitions. It's funny. You know, I called the first Seattle game here in Denver where they left DeFetti, the right tackle, one-on-one with Vaughn a couple of times. And I was in the middle of the game going, if you leave him one-on-one, it's going to be in the next play. It's going to be a sack. Like,
yeah,
you cannot.
Game over.
Right. And of course it was. And like, those are things where they adjusted as an offense. Like, they led the league in rushing. It was like the things that they did under Brian Schottenheimer, a lot of the stuff, having talked to Brian, who's their offensive coordinator, was like, well, we had to do a lot of things to help, like, not to cover him up, but to help him. And, you know, he started playing a lot better, because he had from a scheme standpoint, a personnel standpoint, they started helping him a bunch. Mm-hmm. And you're going to have to, you know, those are things you have to figure out along the way. Now, some of the boot play action and all the stuff, taking advantage of his athleticism, that'll help him out a ton. Like, just that aspect of it where you're running hard one way and you're booting out and you're not blocking the backside and you're doing some of those things, that helps a guy out just an absolute ton. So if they run the ball exceptionally well and they have all that bootleg stuff, now you're saying, okay, let's eliminate 20% of our drop back because our run game is so good and our play action off of it is so good. And so that can be a benefit, you know, because all of a sudden now you flash run or you flash something now. But again, you as a player have to be smart enough to say, hey man, on this particular play, I'm going to take a little bit of a different set. I'm going to show something we've been doing. And make that guy defend it, and then all of a sudden have to restart his pass rush. And you have to have the confidence and the knowledge and understanding of what you're doing to be able to, in game, go, this is a great place to change it up. This is a great place to be aggressive. This is a great place to sell one thing even though we're doing another thing. Like, we've got this guy set up. And again, that's football next level from the neck up. And coaching is part of that, but you've got to have the players that can go, yeah, that's good. This is a good time to do it, because the coach can't tell you to do that on the field at that particular time.
Just please, for the love of God, listen to Mike Munchak. Mm. If you're Garrett Bowles,
yeah,
that's
accept coaching.
Your job, even, number one.
Accept coaching. Accept hard coaching,
and get it done.
Yeah,
and get it done. Training camp starts on Thursday out at UC Health Training Center, and will Vic Fangio go tag team with his first camp? We explain next.
Gotta love the 90s, Sting.
Oh, yeah.
Tag team. But this song was so good back in the day.
Uh-huh.
And Scott DeHuff didn't know it was Hoomp, There It Is. I don't know what he thought it was.
You say Hoomp.
It's Hoomp, There It Is.
Is it Whoomp?
Whoomp.
Whoop. Oh, that was oop.
Oops. Either way, is Vic Fangio going to take it back to the old school? Not because he's an old fool, but he is so cool, and I'll stop rapping right then.
Yes, please do.
Because that's disgusting. But will he be old school with the way that he runs his training camp?
Yeah, I think old school in that he'll demand from his players, you know, excellence, demand precision, demand all those things. That to me is kind of taking it back to the old school way of doing things, the attention to detail. I think it'll be more physical than we've had in the camps in the past. Like, I think there'll be more physicality to this camp than we've seen the last couple of camps. I like the fact that he's moving some of the practices to the afternoon. Yeah, man, kickoff here in Denver is at 2:05 or 2:25.
Yeah.
I think it's good. Let's, like, let's make it as tough as we can. Let's make them be out there in the heat of the day in pads, beating on each other a little bit. I think those things are good. And, you know, I understand it's perspective, you know? I mean, I always look back to when I played and you're like, oh my gosh, these guys got it so good. But the guys in the 70s looked at my, you know, and said, oh my gosh, can you imagine how easy that is? The camp's only 4 weeks, you know?
It's club
or
bed.
5 weeks, yeah. You only hit twice a day. We were in three times a day, you know? I mean, the game progresses that way. So the perspective of the player today is, man, training camp is hard, right? It's tough. Because they don't know, they don't understand what it used to be compared to what it is now. But you got to make it as tough as you can make it. Because, like, you want your players, like, I want my players to face a certain amount of adversity. I want them to face adversity in practice. I want them to face that adversity so they know how to respond to it during game time. If the game is the first time you're ever, you know, you ever get put in a particular or peculiar situation or a tough situation, and you've never had to respond to adversity, you know, that we create the drill for you to win and blah, blah, blah. No. I want to create drills that make it tough on my players. And how do they respond? You know, how to respond to that? How do you play through that? Like I've always told people about, you know, what I call script readers. And I just never want to know what we were doing, ever. Because, you know, my perspective is they don't tell you in the games what they're going to line up in.
Right.
You know, and so I want to be able to see it firsthand and react to it firsthand in practice. I don't want to know what's coming. I just want to make sure that I'm good enough to react to it and I can see it and I've studied it enough to realize, hey, what I see right now in front of me is a, you know, it's an off look. It's not the right look. So something's coming. Right? I want to have that awareness to be able to look at a situation. You know, it's almost like parenting. You know, when your kids are little, they don't know what, like they don't think about what's coming. And you as a parent, you're like, hey man, you know, stop and look both ways before you cross the street because you might get hit by a car. Like you can see it kind of coming. And as a player, I wanted to be able to look at the way guys lined up, where they were, what their body lean was, where they were in regards to where they normally are, and to start to think that way as a player. Like, hey, man, if we're in a defense, like we're in a, like, I'll just call it an under defense, and that Mike, that middle linebacker, who would normally be in that gap over the guard, you know, that's bubbled, right? All of a sudden, he's bossed over two steps weak. Do I think safety rotation's coming down strong? You can pretty much guarantee it.
Right.
So now all of a sudden, if I see that, you're like, oh, okay, well, they're in a single high safety look. So what are they going to play at a single high safety? They're going to play one or three. Like you start to break the game down that way. And you're like, well, now do we want to run to the reduction, the weak side? Versus the three technique, do we want to stay on the bubble look because we've got the mic flanked, but we will have a safety come down? You know what, like, is that an extra defender or can we account for that guy? You know, you start thinking about the game in those terms, and it's amazing how much easier and how much faster you can play and how much easier the game is when you can start looking at those fronts and those looks and say, uh-oh, you know, something smells fishy here. They give me a fishy look? Because if they give me a fishy look, I better have a reel and a rod. Right?
And some hip waders.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's just the way you start looking at the game. That's the difference.
It's putting the onus on yourself and actually relying on yourself and your diagnostic ability rather than a coach is going to tell you exactly what's going to happen. You don't want to be a script reader or a line counter.
Yeah.
I've seen those guys before.
Mm-hmm.
Don't be the line counter.
Right.
I think that's why Donald Stevenson wanted to kick my ass. It's because I called him a line counter in training camp 1 year.
Right. He 1, 2, 3. Oh, I don't want to go against that guy. Right, I'm going to go against, yeah.
Where's Vaughn at? 1, 2, 3. Where I'm at in line. Yeah. Oh, crap. I got to tie my shoe.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, get ahead of me here.
Right.
There's no question. And all those things are important. But I think, like, when we talk old school, I think that's one of the things that, Vic will help, Fangio will help bring to this, team is let's start to understand the whole game, not just your responsibility, but the whole game. When you start studying like your position and not just what you have to do, but what every guy has to do. So, you know, when we would take tests, like you took a test as an offensive lineman. You had to, you put a play up there. You had to take care. You had to have every guy's responsibility. Tackle, guard, center, guard, tackle, tight end, running back. Where does he go? What is his responsibility? Who has who? You know, and you had to give it, you may be playing left guard and you better know what the right tackle is supposed to, you know, what his responsibility is. And when you start looking at it that way, as opposed to just blinders on, I've got to see my responsibility. You just start becoming a much, you'll become a much better football player. But that's what happened. And that to me is old school. It's not just this is what we do, but here's why we do it. Here's why it's important. Here's why you should understand the responsibility of the guy across, like the guy that's the opposite side of you. Why? Like those things. And that to me is a more old school approach to understanding this game.
It's something Vic Fangio, I've seen in minicamp and OTAs, take a lot of time, a lot of teachable moments.
Mm-hmm.
It reminded me of Mike Shanahan's camps, where it's not like the action was slow, because it wasn't. Because McDaniels was just drill, 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 everything fast.
Right.
But he wouldn't, like, actually teach guys anything. Shanahan would, from my observations in the early 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
And then from Fangio in minicamp and OTAs, I think there will be a lot of teachable moments. Vance Joseph was out there just trying to rah-rah guys.
Right.
All right, men, we're back.
Right.
Like, do we have to play better football?
Yeah.
Yes.
Fangio, it seems like there's more teachable moments. And I think that's
we're at full speed.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that interaction, the teachable moments, those are the things where, like, you become a better football player. The other thing is to have everybody on that page. So, you know how much one of our responsibilities is like starting players was, hey man, you're coaching your position. So you come off, you get a drink of Gatorade or whatever. You better flip around. You better see exactly what was called and you better watch the guy that backs you up to make sure he's doing it right. And it becomes your responsibility to coach him. And then the backup player looked at the starter and made sure that he gave you any feedback that he could give you. That's where you start to be. There's where the accountability is built and where you start becoming a really good player.
You gonna get some sleep tonight since you didn't sleep over Vandals weekend?
Oh, I slept last night. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I'm rolling. I'm back in. I'm ready.
You're back?
Yeah, I'm back.
All right. That's a wrap for today's program. It's Schlereth and Evans here. 6 a.m. I'll be filling in for Mike Evans all week. Many thanks to you all for listening. De Huff. Millennial band, of course. The guys behind the glass. I'm Cecil Lammy saying, safety blitz coming up next. Stay tuned and stay frosty.